Times Magazine ethics writer, Randy Cohen, baby. You live, Roth Radio. Yo, David Lee Roth, large and in charge, so large I need a barge. What's the ethics of them putting Durex commercials and all of this Viagra commercials on my show and not on the Super Bowl?
We old people appreciate that.
I'm talking to Randy Cohen. He's the New York Times Magazine ethics writer here, and he's also been a writer on the Dave Letterman Show, the Rosie O'Donnell Show, and he's the author of the book The Good, the Bad, and the Difference, How to Tell the Right from the Wrong in Everyday Situations. Randy, how are you this morning?
Really good. Thanks for having me on.
Did you wake up or stay up?
Woke up. I'm very old.
Okay, now you're talking about ethics here, and usually this is something that comes up in academia, that word, and it scares a lot of people away. Agreed?
It does, and that's why they went with somebody shallow like me to write the column, because it's a, you know, we don't want to terrify the readers.
And they hired somebody deeply superficial like me to interview you. But nevertheless, these kinds of ethics apply to a lot of things that are very familiar. Email privacy at work, telling on a friend, cheating at school. Here's my favorite, stealing soap from a hotel. These are ethical questions, correct?
They are. It's about how to be good in ordinary life.
And what are the questions that most often are posed to you, Randy? What kind of issues usually come up? What's the top three?
More than any other is, do you tell that you yourself haven't done anything wrong, but you know the wrongdoing of other people?
Great. Let's go with a very painfully familiar one from my relationship god-like resume here. If I know that homeboy's girlfriend is going out on him,
right,
am I ethically bound to tell him as a friend?
The most common question. I get this all the time.
Certainly.
And apparently nobody's cheating, but all their friends are. it's very difficult, because if you don't tell him, you're conspiring to deceive him, and you're just some friend you are.
That's the venial sin of leaving things out.
Awful, right. Passive deceit. You're part of this conspiracy. If you do tell him, you're forcing a confrontation between him and his girlfriend. You're throwing a hand grenade into their relationship. Maybe he doesn't want to know. You know, there's an awful lot of people who really bend over backwards, if you'll pardon the expression, or frontwards, really. I'm not judgmental about
that. No, this is a good show, either way.
Okay. To not know that all their friends know somebody's cheating here, but the person who's being cheated on really knocks themselves out to not see what to everybody else is really obvious. Maybe they don't want to know.
I call that selective denial, and I practice that efficiently.
How would we get through the day if we couldn't deceive ourselves? It's God's precious gift, self-deception.
Also, you know, if you tell somebody, you tell your friend that his girlfriend or his wife, more importantly, is out squeezing somebody else, then that may encourage a rift between them, and they hate you for having caused that riff.
So no matter what you do here, you're wrong.
And if they get back together again, then you're the little Indian who knew that great totem pole when it was just a tree stump, and they hate you for remembering.
I wouldn't count on a lot of dinner invitations, no, when they get back. So the question is, but you have to do one or the other, and that's the way the column works, and that's the way ethics works. It's not a kind of abstract discussion. It's what do you do now? So do you tell them or don't you tell them?
And what would your suggestion be?
Well, you have obligations as a friend. This is a friend we're talking about, right? Not a stranger. So it's the obligations of friendship. And the question is, what does your friend want? How do you most promote the happiness of your friend? And the question then is, does your friend want to know?
Okay, so ethics are based on selfish personal interests.
No. Ethics are based on how your actions affect other people.
Okay.
And it's not your selfish interests we're interested in here. It's your duty as a friend.
Okay.
Okay? But some people want to know, and some people don't want to know.
So you're saying learn to discern.
It's excellent advice for all of us. You can't make an ethical choice unless you understand the effects of your actions on other people. So this is your friend, and presumably you want to know, right?
Sure.
And presumably your friend, you know what your friend thinks. That's why you're close. You know, because not everybody wants to know. Like, would you want to know if you were in that position?
It depends if it was Stacy from Dallas or what's her name? Kelly from New York. I wouldn't want to know if it was Kelly, but I already know about Stacy.
We mortals can only envy your life, my friend. But not some people want to know and some people don't want to know. So how do you know if your friend wants to know if you're not sure? Well, this is where my driver's license reform plan comes in.
This is interesting.
Go ahead. You know how on the New York State driver's license, there's a little box you check. I want to be an organ donor. I don't want to be an organ donor.
Oh, this is interesting. Go ahead.
There should be something on the driver's license that says, I want to know if my wife is cheating on me. I don't want to know. So when your friend is in the bathroom, sneak into the wallet, sneak into the purse, take the driver's license. Look, the point of this is, do what your friend would want you to do. right? So if you know your friend wants to know,
that wait a second, you're getting in trouble. They're sneaking into his wallet. You might find out a whole nother pile of stuff that you have to tell somebody.
It's not easy being good.
Let me ask you this:
if he wants to know, you tell. If he doesn't want to know, you have to shut up about it.
Let's move another subject in terms of ethics. I'm talking to Randy Cohen. He is the ethics writer from the New York Times Magazine. Downloading music. File sharing, in the MP3 files and so forth. What are the ethics of that from your purview, from your perspective? Is it okay to do? Is it wrong to do? What's your take on this?
It's wrong to take someone else's work without their consent. People are entitled to be paid for their work. But the question is, how do you respond when that goes on? Everybody wants digital music. Everybody wants to download music. The recording industry has responded like big, stupid dinosaurs. Let's sue some children. I think that's the wrong response. The response is to make digital downloads available conveniently, inexpensively, in a way everybody wants them. But no, you can't take people's work without paying them for it.
And you're talking even if people are just sharing, because that's the bias of the argument there, is that they've already purchased the music and now they're sharing it amongst friends the way you would share a book.
That's right. It's funny because the analogy of stealing isn't really good, because if I steal your car, which by the way I did this morning on the way over, I borrowed it, but you don't have the car anymore. But if I download a piece of music and I pass copies around to all my friends, it's not literally stealing in that sense. You still have the music.
Is it ethical?
No, it's not. It's taking your work without your consent, and I'm not really allowed to do that. If you recorded a piece of music, it's yours to say how it's distributed. I can't just go over and take it.
What about stealing soap from a hotel? Now, I'm reading this right off of here. We've all done it. We've all taken a towel. We've all taken, allegedly, an ashtray.
That's right, a chair, a really good mattress. Who hasn't, walked out of a motel and loaded that in the back of the car?
Okay,
really?
I have actually taken all of that out of a hotel room and glued it to the ceiling with pavement cement, but I'm a special world-class...
Again, we mortals just admire you and wish we were you.
What about on the norm? Is it okay and ethical to take that kind of material if it's in the room? Did you not pay for it?
Yeah, in a sense, you paid for it. And that's true. And the hotel will never kick. The letter I got was from someone. They made the question a little more complicated. Every time this woman traveled on business, she would find the little cart. She would go into the little supply closet. She would load her purse. She wouldn't take a soap. She would take 100 soaps. But to make it morally tricky, she would take it home and give it to a shelter for the homeless.
Okay.
So, okay now, or not okay?
That's my question. Is that now an ethical thing in the face of being a good Samaritan?
Well, if that's okay, then I get to come over to your house, loot the place, because I'm giving it all to charity. It's for the kids, really. That you don't get to steal other people's stuff because you're giving it away.
Okay.
But if you want to take some extra soap, there's a real simple way to sort it out. Ask the folks at the hotel, can I have some extra soap to give to the homeless shelter?
They may even volunteer it, depending on what time you ask.
You have them trapped. You have them trapped, because if they say no, they'll feel like they're such weasels. They're so cold-hearted.
And that's ethical to do that?
Yes. If guilt-tripping were unethical, all our mothers would be going, somewhere awful.
I love it. I'm talking to writer Randy Cohen, and he is the New York Times Magazine ethics writer here. Let's take a phone call up here. We got Bill on track 8 here, Hutch, and he has a question here, I believe. Go ahead, Bill, you're on.
Hey there, V.
Do you have a question for Randy Cohen?
Yeah, I do.
Please.
Going back to if you know a buddy's wife or girlfriend's cheating on him, okay? But what if you also know that your buddy is stepping out on her?
Oh man, I think you need
it one way or the other more.
No. This is gender free. We can just say spouse and spouse. No. What's sauce for the goose is sauce for, and you shouldn't be sleeping with geese, by the way, in my opinion. But I'm very old and very conservative.
Well, that's the Stern Show.
You don't have a job to be the morality police. You don't have to go around and report everybody who's catting around. But you have, if this is your friend, it's the obligations of friendship. Friends have particular duties. Like, different relationships entail different obligations.
Interesting. Thanks for calling. What about ticket scalping? Randy, what about ticket scalping? The fellows who are going to stand out in front of the arena, whatever, is that ethically all right to do?
There's a sort of a right-wing argument for it that says it's a kind of free market thing, that you're doing a service. You're providing tickets for whoever wants to pay for them, and how badly do they want to pay for them? Well, that's who gets in. I think not. I think no one connected with a production who hasn't contributed to its success in some way is morally entitled to profit from it. So that if I actually don't play in a band with you, I really don't get to make money off of your work. And I think that's what's wrong with tickets.
Does that include bootlegging T-shirts? Because we're all familiar when we go to our favorite concerts that there are all these fellas standing around with all the knockoff T-shirts in the parking lot. And what they claim is that that's, again, free enterprise and that you know, the bands make enough money or what have you. You know all the routine arguments.
Right,
again,
right.
Is that ethical?
Isn't it wonderful that people think Americans have lost their ingenuity, but when it comes to rationalizing dreadful behavior, we are second to none, my friend. We can go kill a guy and we can tell you why it was really okay to do it. No, it's not. I can make a T-shirt that says, you know, that editorializes, that's free expression. You know, David Lee Roth is, you know, it's a big dumb monkey. You know, debatable. Yeah, you know, not.
Well, it depends which one of my parents you're asking, but please,
right,
forge
right,
ahead.
Right. And your opinions of monkeys, in my view, a fine species. But that's editorializing. I can do that. And, you know, the law would let me do that, too. Law and ethics, not necessarily the same, but in this case, they are. But if I just want to exploit your success as a musician and sell, you know, David Lee Roth action figures, I can't do that, either legally or ethically.
Interesting. Should I tell a friend that his watch is fake? Is this a question that you've actually received in an email? Because I was wearing a fake watch for the last 2 years, a $15 knockoff from down in Chinatown, and everybody would ask me about it because it looked cool. And I was very proud that it was a knockoff. In fact, it was even better than the real thing. Is that ethical for me to buy gear like this? Is it ethical for people to sell knockoff materials like this if it's so popular and if it's priced differently?
Oh, you know, if it's a Rail-X, you know, R-A-L-E-X, or, you know, then fine. It's not a counterfeit.
It was a Polex.
A Polex.
Yes, and it only lost 4 minutes a day, and I'm sad to actually see it go. I consider it almost a work of art. It's something that I know it's not real.
Right.
But because it's a knockoff and so cleverly done, and in the back of it, it's obviously a knockoff, I look at it like an object of art, okay? But you're saying that's not ethical.
No, I think you've got to exactly the key point here. It's not real. There's no deception involved. We know the Polex. It's a kind of parody. It's a cartoon of a rich person's watch. It's a kind of satire about a watch. Like, what kind of jerk wants to pay $20,000 for a watch?
When Marcel Duchamp, you know, the surrealists, took the toilet bowl and put it on the art gallery wall and said, it's no longer a toilet. It's an object of art that makes a statement about the art world, right, et cetera, et cetera. Then that's acceptable. That's an ethical thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the deception that makes it unacceptable and unethical.
Interesting. If I don't get charged for my appetizer at a restaurant, or even more importantly, if I make the bill, I get the la cuenta, I get the bill, and they forgot to add, and they're saying $70 off. What is the ethical thing for me to do? I think I know the answer.
I think you and our mothers are both going to start calling right now if we don't. I mean, we know. What do you think?
Well, I know what the average person would do.
Oh, do you?
Probably not fess up to it, especially if it's under $20.
So that's the threshold for deceit and treachery. You can steal anything as long as it's under $20.
Down where I live, it is.
Bad news for lifesaver makers.
I really believe that if it's under a deuce or some easily manageable one bill in your hand, that most people will rationalize and say, hey, I got a little windfall. Jesus likes me today. And I got a little extra on the side. You disagree? You think most people would fess up?
I think you're going to be banned from every deli in New York. You know?
That's already happened, Randy. Let's take another call here. Number 10, Jeff. He wants to know about downloading. Roth Radio, you're in the spotlight. Holmes, hit it.
David Lee, excellent show. Finally getting an insight to the mind of Roth.
Yeah, it's a steel trap. Nothing gets in. Do you have a question for Randy Cohen? Ethically, do you have a question?
Yes, well, it's about the digital downloading, and the scenario is we're all for it, and it's not our fault that the dinosaurs don't have the methods in place for the artists to actually get paid properly.
So you're saying that it's wild, wild west, and that if you can get away with it, it's okay until the sheriff finally antes up and he can catch you?
Well, the sheriff has caught up because the Supreme Court just last summer held Grokster, I think, in Music City and whatnot, libel, and they're trying to...
Yeah, but that's the map. I'm talking about the territory. In the real world, most people are still sharing files and claiming that that is an acceptable, ethical way of behavior. Do you agree or disagree?
Yes, I agree. In the real world, people are sharing music just like we used to just share... make a copy of a CD onto a tape and give somebody a tape.
And you think that's acceptable?
It's not acceptable anymore because now it's on such a large scale. It's, like you said, the wild, wild west.
Okay, Randy, and talk to that, will you? That a lot of people, I truly believe, you know, we grow up watching the old black and white movies, especially my generation. I'm 51 years old.
Oh,
and
the I whole can stop you, my friend.
The whole, well, you haven't seen my x-rays. Well, I'm a lot older than you. I'm a lot older than any of the interns here, too, in terms of x-rays. But what we're talking about is the file sharing. And a lot of people particularly believe, I think, that if you can get away with it, because the forces of good are chasing you. You know that. It's a Robin Hood kind of a thing. That it's okay to get away with until you get caught. What do you think, Randy?
Oh, I look for. I'm going to visit you in jail every day. I am. Because this kind of rationalization, that anything's okay as long as you don't get caught. But only if I understand your moral code now, it's up to 20 bucks.
It's not my moral code.
This is the listeners.
Oh, I'm sharing an idea that a lot of listeners possess. I do not.
It's okay to do it unless you get caught?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to become a very skillful burglar. I like this because it encourages quality of crime. That it's not a moral problem anymore, it's a technical problem. So you can steal all you want as long as you're a very skillful thief.
Okay, because there are certain Far Eastern philosophies that maintain that if you can get over on your brother, your blood family brother, through whatever kind of deception or whatever, that as long as you're doing business, that the power of deception is a basic tenet of competition, okay? And that if you can fool even your own blood brother, that that's an acceptable thing because he should have been on his game. Is that ethical?
Yes, if you're a member of the Corleone family, it is. I think you're describing a kind of gangster ethics that it's do unto others before they do unto you. It's if I don't get caught, it's okay.
Okay, but isn't that corporate America?
Oh, yeah.
It's exactly what I experienced doing all of my contracts and everything from here. I have a girlfriend who does yoga. I walked in. She was doing the downward facing dog position with her tush in the air. She says, have you ever seen this before? I said, yeah, every time I do a contract with Warner Brothers.
You know, you're going to have to do that contract in French if it's Warner Books now, which makes it, I think, that much more fun. You know, and you can take this one step further. You're kind of leaning on the law here and what you'll get caught for doing that's illegal. But a very great man named Michael Kinsley, who used to put out Slate Magazine, said the real crime isn't what's illegal. The real crime is what's legal. And if we're discussing power now, it's whoever has enough power to actually get the law written. That's where the crime takes place.
I'm talking to Randy Cohen, ethics writer for New York Times Magazine. Randy, can you sit through the commercial with us for another minute and share a few more thoughts with us?
It's not really like disgusting or scary, yes.
You're in no immediate danger. Roth Radio, all of you listening, you are, baby. Yeah. Roth Radio, baby. I'm David Lee Roth. Right here, and I got my very special guest. His name is Randy Cohen. He's the ethics writer for New York Times Magazine. Good morning, Randy.
Morning, David.
We're sharing a whole lot of ideas about what is ethical and what isn't ethical. The emails are piling up, etc. Somebody's got a gas pump mistake that they experienced here. Give me track 8 here, Hutch, and let's see if he's got a question for Randy. Roth Radio,
hey,
you're in.
Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Go ahead, friend. Randy's listening.
All right, Randy, you're like speaking like exactly how I'm how I think.
Well, one of us is, drinking too much then.
Exactly. But there was a gas pump problem, an acquaintance, instead of $2.90 a gallon, he fills up for 29 cents a gallon, instead of $45, he paid a couple, a dollar or two. And he's like thinking like he scored like big time. And I'm like, how does he rationalize that? And my big thing is, if you have to rationalize a mistake like that, then you're wrong. That's my, rule of thumb.
What do you think, Randy?
I think that's a pretty good way to work out what the right thing is to do. If you're starting to think of elaborate reasons why it's okay, it's probably not. And another way to think about this stuff is it's got to be symmetrical. If you were on the other side of the equation, like instead of paying $2.90 a gallon, suppose it rang up at $29 a gallon, would you say something?
Right.
Would you complain? So if you're going to complain if they're overcharging you, you got to tell them when they're undercharging you.
And I tell them, I said, if Bill Gates dropped a $20 bill, would you return it to him? And he's like, absolutely not. I said, whether it's, $1,000 or $5, it's stealing.
I'm wondering if there's a sliding scale of ethics in most people's minds, because if Bill Gates drops a 20, how many people would go, it's Bill Gates. He's not going to miss it. This came from the hand of God to me. What do you think, Randy?
Oh, I thought the question was going to be, if Bill Gates drops a 20 and bends down to pick it up, can you kick him? you're asking a very simple one. No, you can't steal even from rich folks, but you can, do everything you can to make sure he pays and Microsoft pays their share of taxes for it. change.
Can you steal from the government if the IRS makes a mistake?
No, you can't steal from the government. Once, you know, once the word "can you steal," once you phrase it that way, you know, I think we know the answer, no matter where that's in.
Yeah, I know the answer, but a lot of folks, a lot of blood family and everybody in between poses these kinds of questions. Okay, let's not use the word stealing. If I inherited this good luck and it came from the government and they mischarged me or something, should I accept the good luck is how most people might rationalize that. And you're saying there's no rationalization.
No, there's no rationalization.
It's,
no.
Thanks for calling. Roth Great Radio, call. 866-313-3733. Okay, we talk a lot about music here, obviously. And in terms of what's happening in truth in advertising, you know, there are a lot of rock bands wandering out there that are no longer comprised of the original members. I don't know that it's like Harvard Law School, where even though the professors change, the bar stays nice and high, and it's still a quality education. If you're missing the lead vocalist from a band, and you're missing most of the guitar players, etc., yet they advertise it as a specific name, is that ethical?
Right, or which of the nine different groups touring as the Drifters are the real Drifters? You know, science has baffled. There's a sort of funny paradox here. That it's a very old one in philosophy. It's called Locke's Socks. It's the philosopher John Locke in the 18th century. And the idea is he has this pair of socks. And so there's a hole in the socks. He puts a little patch on. And then 6 weeks later, he has to darn them. And eventually, the socks have none of the original material that they had in the socks. Are they the same pair of socks? Are they still Locke socks?
If you've replaced every rivet, every thread, bolt like a Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
And is that ethical?
Right. Clyde McFadder's no longer the lead singer. Benny King's no longer the lead singer. And none of the original members of the Drifters are still in the band. In what sense are they still the Drifters? Well, in my view, in no sense. And this is where deception comes in. If you say in the ad, here's the band and here who's playing in the band, and then
stop
fine.
Right there. They never say that. They only print the name of the band. They say, here comes Journey, but the singer is gone. The original keyboard player who wrote the stuff is gone. They have a very reasonable facsimile, but is that still ethical to advertise it by that band name?
I think are two of the original roadies who once, you know, worked for Journey, they're still showing up and schlepping.
No. They're the two guys who are in Leonard Skynyrd now.
Oh, I see.
Seriously, so, I think there's one Leonard left. Seriously, out of the whole gumbo.
Only one Leonard?
There's only one guy. The original singer's brother sings the songs, etc. It's been handed down. Is that ethical to do?
No, of course not. And I think you got right to the point here. It's a truth in advertising thing. You're misleading people to buy a ticket for something that they're not going to get.
Interesting call. What are some of the other calls or emails that you get? What are the most popular questions that you entertain routinely that our listeners can identify with?
Often it's never big stuff. It's never, you know, what about my experiments with cloning? Those guys never write me. It's never, you know, I'm thinking of lying the country into a war. I don't get any of those kind of letters. It's little stuff. It's, can I bring my own food to the movies? Those kind of questions.
Okay, can you bring your own food to the movies? If you pay the price of a ticket, can you bring your own food to the movies?
And the argument is, or when you bought that ticket, is that ticket a kind of agreement that you said, I'm going to obey all your rules. I've decided I want to pay, you know, $11 for that 10-gallon tub of cola, right? I say no. I say when you bought your movie ticket, all you've agreed to do is watch the movie and limit yourself to 3 or 4 cell phone calls during the movie. But if you want to bring your own food in, I say fine. Now, it's against the rule. But does that rule have any moral force? Is it an agreement you made? No, I say not.
So you say it's okay, you can take your own food in.
If they want you to buy food from them, they should provide food people want at a price they want to pay. That it should be a free choice, freely made. But they shouldn't there should not be popcorn sniffing dogs that will rip your crotch out if you bring your own stuff.
Which is the title of my next record. Anyway, Randy Cohen, who is the ethics writer for the New York Times Magazine here, give us a call, 866-313-3733. If you have an ethical question. Are ethics empirical? They don't change at all, or can they change according to context?
Behavior changes all the time. We act differently than the ancient Romans did. The ancient Romans act differently from the Phoenicians. That conduct changes, but I think there are certain fundamental principles that are universal.
Okay,
time in every place, you could, if you were smart enough and articulate enough, you could persuade everybody to work their conduct out in terms of these basic principles.
Okay, what about the folks who are from PETA, Protection of the Animal, taking care of animals or in whatever respect that is. And I fully support that, by the way.
Me too. I think they at first seem like loose cannons. They seem very nutty, but
How do I?
I think they have the moral high ground.
Here's my ethical question. If I completely support that, how do I sanction going to Kentucky Fried Chicken that very same day? If I completely support all of the premises, you know, of ethical treatment of animals and so forth, how do I rationalize wearing leather shoes?
I think you don't rationalize going to Kentucky Fried Chicken. I think that line of, once you accord moral standing to animals, I think that eventually leads you to becoming a vegetarian. You might not have the moral courage to make that leap right now, but I think you have to stop rationalizing.
Is it ever ethical to kill somebody?
No, it's not ever ethical to kill me, let me put it that way.
Okay, but let's go a little further with this. You know the hunting issue that is in the United States of whether hunting is ethical treatment of animals or whether that's a reasonable pursuit when you take a gun and you go hunting for whatever,
right,
deer or whatever. That's not the subject I want to touch on. I want to touch on issues like all of the endangered species in Africa,
yeah,
okay, particularly the gorillas in Rwanda, Gombe National Park, etc., etc. And there are a number of people that I'm aware of who go hunting in Rwanda into gorilla territory, and they hunt the poachers. Is that ethical?
No. You're making a defense of vigilante.
I'm not making a defense yet.
To defend that would be to defend vigilante justice, saying if person A does something wrong, then person B, then all bets are off.
What are the ethics of allowing all the gorilla population to be decimated and become extinct?
There are no ethics there. That's despicable. It's unambiguously wrong. But because person A does something wrong, that doesn't mean all bets are off and you can tap dance on their head.
Nevertheless, speak to this. The gorilla population in those parts of the world are at the tipping point of extinction because of a dysfunctional infrastructure in the government, the police force, whatever the security is. Nobody is doing anything about it. So you're saying that that's unethical to go and take that into their own hands?
I'm saying it's unethical to go and kill poachers. Yeah, it is unethical to go and kill poachers.
I'm not defending that, but I'm saying that there's nothing else is going to happen.
Is someone independently dropping in and acting to save the gorillas an honorable thing? Yeah.
No,
sure.
No, it's completely a failure program. What I'm saying is there's a failure program. You have an entire species that is on the brink of extinction. There is no infrastructure in that country protecting them, and you're saying there's no sliding scale of ethics.
You set up a series of premises that I think are all debatable, that there is no alternative. If there is truly no alternative but vigilante justice to go in and have independent teams parachuting in and fighting to save the gorillas, if there were truly no other alternative way to approach that problem, then you might justify that. That the consequences of not doing it would be so dire.
The consequences of not doing it at this single point,
right,
is that if we do nothing, then that whole species is going to be driven into extinction in our lifetime.
But you've set up a false dilemma because the alternative isn't to do nothing. The question should be what do you do? Not do you do something? Yes, of course you do something. But the question is what do you do? And what is the, can you devise something to do that does not violate your own principles?
Interesting. I'm talking to Randy Cohen here. He's the ethics writer for New York Times Magazine. Go ahead and give us up here a recording on the DVDs here from Philly. His name's Dave Roth Radio. You're in. Go ahead, Dave. You're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Go ahead. Give a question up for Randy. Go ahead, man.
About with the downloads with the music, I can understand that. But my question with DVDs and VCR tapes, now the companies that, you know, say that they'd rather you buy the DVD or videotape, they're the same ones that are actually making the blank videos that I purchase. So, yeah, where's the fine line? That's like a double-edged sword, kind of.
Randy?
Yeah, there's a lot of self-interest in this all over the place. The record industry's argument is not so much one of morals, it's one of money. These guys want to maximize their profits. The people who want to sell you VCRs, they want to sell you VCRs, so they're inclined to argue that way. That's why we should put these questions to detached, honorable men like me and Dave, who have no stake in it, and can, from our Olympian perch, you know, decide what's best.
I resent the word honorable, but proceed.
So I didn't mean it, you know, in a bad way.
We're having a good time here. I'm talking to Randy Cohen. He's the ethics writer for New York Times Magazine. I got one more question here for you, Randy. We're in the Grammys phase, and we've been talking about music routinely here, and virtually every second act is using the computer for tape. Okay, they don't use tape anymore, but you sing along with the computer. You sing along with your own voice. You prefab instruments that aren't there on stage. And 9 times out of 10, it's the brass sections and all of this that come into play. If you don't advertise or say up front that this is what you're doing, for example, we have artists like the Chemical Brothers, which is nothing but a set of computers and a keyboard, and they're more like disc jockeys. And they say right up front, half of this is coming right off the disc. Great, I accept that. What about the musicians who allow you to believe or allow you to maintain the perception that they're really singing and really playing, but they're using that kind of instrumentation and apparatus in the background? Is that ethical? Is that acceptable to you, Randy?
Right. I think you're circling around the same moral principle in a lot of your questions, which is you can't deceive the people you're dealing with. There's nothing – if you want to use computers in your music, if you want to present no live music at all, and an audience wants to hear that, that's an aesthetic choice. That's a musical choice. I want to go hear that, fine. But you can't deceive people about what they're buying a ticket for.
Fascinating.
Whether it's you know, the fake Drifters, the fake Journey, an all digital track, and you don't actually hear anyone sing. Although there are certain singers, if I could, I would be more inclined to buy a ticket if I could guarantee that they wouldn't sing. And I think you could add to that list yourself.
It's like the old Marx Brothers thing. You know, you can pay me to sing, or you can pay me not to sing, and that'll cost you more.
Can you promise me Brittany won't be singing?
I will. My special guest here, Randy Cohen. He's the ethics writer, New York Times Magazine. Thank you so much for joining us
really
here this morning,
it.
Randy. Come on back the next time you got something to talk about. That seat belongs to you.
Thanks so much.
God bless, baby. Yeah.
David Lee Roth, Mornings.
Roth Radio, baby, 866-313-3733. I can't believe we got calls of people wondering if that's ethically cool, if we can take the jump track and mix it with Christina Aguilera. That's combustible, man. That we upset somebody with that is so very rock and roll. I got another ethical question here. We were just talking to Randy Cohen, the ethics writer for the New York Times Magazine. Here potentially is the most explosive email that we've gotten all week right here. From New York City, it's from Eddie Ohm. What are the ethics behind these Muslim cartoons? I think he's reflecting on the cartoon of Allah with the bomb on his head coming out of the Danish newspaper. Dig this. What are the ethics behind these Muslim cartoons? The idea that one could use freedom of expression and knowingly or otherwise offend literally millions of people across the globe. Wow, who's thinking on this? 866-313-3733. You call me. You tell me what you think are the ethics behind this, because I come from the United States of America. And this is where free expression, free theory, free thinking, especially in a Grammy week, man, that's the musical celebration of the God-given rights to speak your mind, whatever that is. And in terms of just harassing somebody and calling them a name, hey, it's what you answer to, not what you're being called. And in terms of a cartoon, it's a caricature. It's an illustration of what somebody perceives to be a difficult social scenario, okay? I don't know that it's ethically wrong for somebody to upset somebody knowingly. In fact, isn't that kind of what I've been doing for a living for a while, baby? Yeah. So give me a call, 866-313-3733. What do you think, animal? Is this guy on the money, or is he out of his skull? What do you think?
Well, you know, it's like you know, like Kanye West, you know, he was on the front of the Rolling Stones with, you know, the halo looking like Jesus. We didn't go around burning up buildings and fighting and killing people. You know, it's just freedom of speech. We saw it. We disagreed. Some liked it. And then we went on.
This is a very good point. But a lot of people did rise up and send in cards and letters to whatever Rolling Stone. We got people complaining. Oh, yeah. You know, they're complaining about Kanye posing as Jesus or, you know, just.
But that's just their free speech responding, which is fine. Also, they're not bashing anyone's heads in.
If five people died yesterday behind what you're talking about over there, Dave.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, this guy sounds like he's saying that the ethics behind this cartoon is that you should not use your freedom of expression, knowingly or otherwise, to offend literally millions of people across the street. Well, what do you think the whole purpose of an illustration like that is? If you don't offend people, if you don't cause shock, if you don't cause some combustion, then the car does never get started. The horse never gets out of the gate. We just went through this whole rigmarole on the illustration that was on page 6. Cagle is the name of the cartoonist there, one of my favorites. And he had the illustration of the soldier who had lost his arms and his legs. He was a combat veteran. He was in a hospital bed, and he had lost all four of his limbs. And there was an authority figure there, supposedly government or whatever, with a clipboard going, well, I'm going to downgrade this to battle-hardened. And he caused a question, caught a lot of conflict, a lot of noise, in an effort to point a finger at the people who were carrying those clipboards and demonizing and making little of catastrophic injuries. I think the guy who was doing the cartoon of whatever, Muhammad or whatever, he's saying that that's an explosive issue. You put a picture of that guy wearing a bomb for a hat, it says, this is an explosive issue. And guess what happens on the heels of it? Explosion. Exactly what he thought would happen, what he was describing, transpired. Now you have a whole lot of individuals who are rushing into the street saying, no, you can't do that ethically, etc., etc. Aren't these the individuals that if you just sort of let it all alone in the Mideast, what do you think's going to happen over there? If they get this upset over a cartoon, oh, we're just going to avoid the whole Mideast calamity there. We're going to let them all just sort of get along with each other. And then what happens when that kind of a calamity happens in the United States? What's going to happen when we start having Islamic, Muslim, Muhammad, or whatever demonstrations because of one freaky little cartoon here in the streets of your own halls of academia? What's going to happen in your own backyard? It's real easy to talk about when it's on the other side of the ocean. What are you going to say to me when it actually happens here? Go ahead. Give me Joe. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Hit it fast, Jack. Go.
Yeah, you know, this culture, these countries where they're riding, they have no free press. They have no free speech. They have no religious tolerance. It's ridiculous, you know, for them to now turn around and say, well, you can't do this because it offends us. You know, these are freedoms that are cornerstones for our civilization. You know, they're hard fought, they're hard won, and we're not going to give them up.
I agree. And do you think this applies also to Europe?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what do you do about this? Do you just bow under like the Danish government, or do you? What happens when there's demonstrations in the United States streets on this behalf? Do we make the cartoonists behave? Do we place restrictions on the artists in order to cater to this nonsense?
No, absolutely not. And they should be allowed to demonstrate. But you know, this destruction of embassies—that's a violation of international law and diplomacy. And their governments aren't stopping it. It's crap.
Well, their governments are utilizing it as a promotion effort, okay?
Exactly.
Their governments are utilizing it to expedite their political aims here. This scares the hell out of me that this is happening over in Europe. How many of the musicians and stuff on the Grammys last night are from Europe? A lot. Okay, what happens when they start putting the thumb on song lyrics because it upsets somebody, a Christian Scientist somewhere? What happens when we put the thumb on cartoons to say, well, you can't make fun of Mormons or Catholics anymore? What happens when we start putting the thumb again on the lyrics? Oh, my God, this is retarded to me. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, absolutely, it's censorship.
Thank you so much. Roth Radio, give me the cartoon topic on number 10 there, Hutch. Roth Radio, Spotlight, you in it. Get it.
Good morning, DLR.
Thank you.
JP from White Plains.
Please, share
Welcome
with us.
Welcome to New York. I think on this particular topic, I think it would be unethical not to for a newspaper not to express its opinion regarding what's going on with terrorism and who's committing these terrorist acts. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. Maybe it's all Muslims, maybe it's a few Muslims, maybe it's 50% of the Muslims. But I think a newspaper has an obligation to print what they believe. That's what their job is.
Is the newspaper in Denmark bowing underneath pressure? Are they issuing disclaimers, or are they standing their ground? Do you know?
Well, as far as I know, I think they fired somebody. If it wasn't to the cartoonists themselves, I believe they fired an editor, if not the cartoonists themselves, and they've issued apologies. And I think that that's wrong. I mean, they can put a disclaimer on there. Look, if we're offending Muslims who are innocent of terrorism, or, you know, we don't, that's not our intention. If you want to put a disclaimer at the bottom, that's fine. But, I mean, the public has the right to know. Terrorism is a serious issue.
Hold on. You know what? I think they resigned.
Yeah, that's the New York guys. The guy and the editor of that Denmark newspaper, I heard him on the news, and he was standing his ground. He said, if I go to a mosque, I respect their rules, but when I'm not there, I don't have to do their rules. They want me to submit to their rules even when I'm in my own hometown.
Okay, and who just resigned? Is that Cagle from
Post? Some guys in New York paper who the New York paper would not run the cartoon, so these four guys resigned.
Good for them.
Okay.
Good for them. I'm so sick of this repression, idea that we're going to put the thumb on people, on our artists, on our musicians, our journalists, our public speakers here. I'm even getting this kind of nonsense. Don't play this kind of music. Watch out. Don't say something negative about Springsteen. And if you say something, don't say nothing negative about Maroon 5 and on and on. And I'm now experiencing that from this side of the microphone. I think if they didn't stand their ground in Denmark, they should be fired. Anyways, thanks for calling. Cleveland, talking about the Middle East. One more time. Do you think this is an ethical cartoon? Should they have the right to the free speech or not? Friend Mark, you're on. Hit it.
I think people should have a right to free speech, but I think no matter what you do in the Middle East, I think there are a bunch of nuts over there, and no matter what you're going to do, there's going to be an uprising, you know, forever and ever. These guys always have been in turmoil and always will be. I can't understand why they are or how they are.
So what do you think? Should we draw in the brakes on doing cartoons because it upsets them?
No, I don't. We don't file for them, vice versa. I don't know at all, but I'm just telling you that they're a bunch of nuts. You know, people should be able to express their opinion.
I agree 100%. Thank you much. 866-313-3733. Lou, talk to me about censorship in the newspaper. We got a few minutes left. Go ahead, Lou.
Hey, Dave. How you doing today?
Great, friend.
Here's the thing. What if, here's a scenario for you.
Please.
I understand free speech. I understand everyone should speak their mind. But what if a Muslim newspaper in this country printed something cartoonish or funny about 9/11 or anything that would have offended us? Now, is that free speech? I mean, I know we'd be in an uproar and we'd go crazy about it.
No, we wouldn't. We'd have a lot of talk on the Larry King show. We'd have Jim Rome speak about it. I would talk about it. The religious right would rise up.
And stop buying their paper.
Just a little bit, you know, and in terms of, okay, here's the latest conflict. It's on par with the latest imitation of the fake Paris Hilton. Who really cares? It's in a cartoon. Just like we disposed of the issue with the last cartoon about the wounded soldier and the administrator. We talked about it. There was a lot of uproar, but it's disposed of. What you're talking about here is, what if it's not disposed of? You're having people who are hanging on to something. Do you recommend that, in case we think it's going to upset a whole group of people, that we don't do the cartoon? Is that your suggestion?
I don't suggest that we don't do it, but I suggest that we don't act like hypocrites and not say, because I know after certain, like 9/11 or after certain acts of stuff that these people did, there were deaths across the country, racial crimes, and a lot of stuff that happened as a consequence of what the Muslims did to us, you know, for 9/11 and other things across the country. So, I mean, there are, like they say, you know, a few bad apples shouldn't ruin the bunch, but there were a few bad things that happened and deaths and stuff like that after the terror attack.
Okay, but nevertheless, you're sounding a little abstract to me. It sounds to me like you're on the fence here. Do you agree that it should be perfectly okay, no matter who you upset, that you can put a caricature or an illustration in a public newspaper if you believe that there is an implicit message? Do you agree or disagree?
Absolutely, as long as we could take the same joke. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, me too.
That's a genius comment. Great call. Right on. Great day, huh?
Hey, Dave, I got a question for you. You know I'm an artist, right? What if I was to get a slot in the newspaper to draw something about the White House? What if I made everybody in the White House.
Oh, stop it. There's already a lot of people with that exact job, okay? And we love that in the United States. I support it. I completely support it. And you're saying, what if you made the president black?
Yeah, even better. With big lips and all that. You think I would get it out?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding? Reverend Al Sharpton would defend your right to positive public commerce to the very bitter end.
You saw what Bush told him. The father told him, you know, don't quit your day job. Just keep being a preacher and let us run the White House.
I think that it's perfectly ethically okay. And if anybody is socially retarded enough to say, hey, no, we shouldn't do caricatures, we shouldn't do illustrations because it's going to upset a community, it's going to upset a subgroup, it's going to upset a race of people, it's going to upset a religion, then you are a social retard and you belong listening to this show every single morning, baby, and maybe we can re-educate you. Don't go away. We'll be back tomorrow.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.